It's time for the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network. Live from the Ferg Sports Bar and Grill Studios, across from Tropicana Field in downtown St. Petersburg, Florida. Providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps and the pros across Tampa Bay and the USA. Get your head in the game with the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection and your hosts, Mike Rickard and Ben Botham.
Welcome to hour number two in the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection, live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill down here across from the Trop on a nice crisp, it's almost like a fall day in Iowa, but it's a beautiful Saturday, our first show of 2023. Ben Botham across from me. Ray Kennedy is going to be hanging around for the next hour as well. We've got a conversation with a good friend of mine, Dolph Bulliam. Dolph Bulliam, former Drake Bulldog in 1969. You want to do a little Google searching right now. He, in the Final Four, they took on the Mighty Bruins of UCLA and John Wooden and the Wizard of Westwood. And it was just a glorious time for Drake University, Cinderella story, and Dolph was a part of that. In fact, he was drafted by the Boston Celtics as well as the Dallas Cowboys to give you an idea of the kind of athlete he was. And he then moved into marketing for Drake University, and he was a television, radio, and now he lives in Chicago, and he did the Johnny Bright story. Look it up. It's a documentary. And then when we get done talking to Dolph, which is always engaging, we will then kick it around for about a half an hour. We're going to talk, of course, all things Bucks. Mark Ferguson is a little under the weather today. He was going to come down and wants to make certain, and I knew we were going to talk about it anyway, and Ray Kennedy was there. We're going to talk about the Rays and moving the proposal forward. You know, Ken Welch and the mayor needs to move this proposal forward and get this wrapped up, and Mark is a big lobbyist. We had a meeting the other day, so we'll talk a lot about that. And then, of course, with our man Ray here, we will talk all things Bucks as they get ready to travel to Atlanta tomorrow, 1 o'clock kick in a game, which I hope they don't play too many of the starters. Ray, your opinion there? You think they'll play him a half quarter? We've got five players injured list right now. It's a know-nothing game, but I still think you need to keep that momentum with your starters.
Difference between 8-9, 9-8, right? They've already got their postseason locked up, the four seed. But I said, you know what? Todd Bowles would be a great chance to flex his muscle as the head coach of this team and just tell Tom, look, go out, get dressed, stay through the motions, then take the sideline and let the other guys, let the young guys go out and earn a victory. It could pay dividends in the future.
I don't think he's got it in him. Bowles is, he's a pushover. I have no faith in his coaching ability at all. And it seems like the only
thing. That's always our optimistic opinion.
No. Hold on.
I like it. We got to have different opinions.
But I will say, when Tom Brady takes over the offense and you see him do the, kind of.
The 2 minute?
The little 2 minute drill. He's calling all the plays. He gets the job done and he still has it in him. I saw it on Monday when I was at the game. He knows what he's doing. He's still got the arm.
You were at the game?
I was. I got to see Mike Evans.
Why didn't you take a bunch of pictures? We post them on our Facebook.
Oh, I didn't think about that, Mike. I'm sorry. I did get some pictures. I'll definitely give them to you next time. But it was crazy to see what Mike Evans did. He's 11 straight seasons of...
Well, it's nine, right?
Sorry. But, 11's the record. But 9 straight seasons of 1,000 yards receiving.
But you know, you made a point. If we get unless the call comes in, let me know, Mike. But Todd Bowles was handed a stacked deck. Hey, Todd Bowles, Coach Arians hands it to us, played for him at Temple in 85. Todd Bowles played in the league as a Washington football player, Commander, Redskin, whatever, for a year.
Redskins.
Yeah, Redskins. And it's all in perspective. But Bruce Arians hands him the team, but he says, oh, by the way, you got the greatest of all time at quarterback in Byron Leftwich is calling an offense, and then we're going to have three Pro Bowlers retire or leave the team or be injured. So he was handed a stacked deck, but you're right. He's not been making the calls so far in 2022, but I think this week would be a perfect chance for him as we start 2023 to make the call and say, Tom, 11 days in camp and you went to a millionaire's wedding, sit your butt on the sideline. We're going to let the young guys get some playing time. This is how I coach this team. And even if it ends up being to their detriment, Coach Bowles has laid the foundation and he's the leader of this team. So, but you're right.
So his New Year's resolution was to grow a spine, you're saying?
I'm hoping.
You know, one thing, and of course the pundits all have their opinions and the fan base. They don't like his expressionless lack of emotion that they see, and unfortunately that that's a label that guys like him get. I mean, Tony Dungy wasn't a rah-rah guy.
No, but and you go from Bruce Arians to Todd Bowles. Bruce Arians is one of the most animated guys ever on a sideline, to his own detriment, the fact that the guy would turn three shades of red and go crazy. And Todd Bowles, he crosses those arms and looks like he can't believe what's happening. And that has been this season. It's been a little bit of a thorn in the side when a team's had their trials and tribulations.
Well, Bruce Arians was just inducted into the Ring of Honor for the Buccaneers, which was great to see him on the field. And who knows, maybe he comes back next season, get rid of this guy and bring him back
come
in.
Come on, Ben, you're busting myself now.
Hey,
now
you want me to be an optimist? Hey, I'm just throwing that out there. He looked pretty amped up to be back on the field. He seemed pretty positive. They wheeled out the big Lombardi trophy and
yes,
did a whole huge ceremony. He looked like a guy who still wanted to be on the field.
Great job, too. He goes next to Rondé Barber there in the southeast end zone. And did you know that he used to babysit Rondé and Tiki when they were kids?
I knew that.
His father was on a coaching staff with him at Temple, and they were, you know, coaches, assistant coaches together. And whenever one of the boys were sick, Bruce and Christine Arians would watch the boys. So he's been knowing Rondé since he was a kid, and now he's forever next to him in the Ring of Honor.
All right, gentlemen, we'll continue this conversation at the bottom of the hour. But right now, and, you know, for me, if you see me getting a little moisty-eyed, it's because this is an emotional conversation, because he's one of my great friends in Des Moines, Iowa. He did a ton of favors for me. I was very instrumental in the little local sports connection evolving into the Iowa Sports Connection on the statewide. He got me immersed in Drake University, the Bulldog family. He provided me with interns from Drake University, that contact. And I've looked forward to this conversation for quite some time. He's the great Dolph Pulliam, and he's kind enough to join us from the Windy City where my daughter lives. And you should be sitting across from me, Adolphus, about 70-some degrees with a short-sleeved shirt on and your shorts.
Quit it. You're killing me.
Hello, my friend.
Hey, man, I miss you. I miss you. Miss all of the fun that we used to have together and do the things that we did. It was a great time.
We did have a couple of decades, actually. And one thing I'm impressed is apparently you haven't slowed down. You've gotten involved in this project with Johnny Bright and his documentary. How did that evolve?
Well, I tell you what. You know, Johnny Bright, I had a chance to meet him my senior year at Drake University. And here's what happened. My coach called me at the dorm, and he says, Dolph, I want you to come over here to my office. I want you to meet somebody. And so I came over, and he introduced me to Johnny Bright. Well, I didn't know Johnny Bright, and I was embarrassed. I didn't know about it. And so he says, Dolph, I want you to take Johnny Bright on a tour of the athletic department. And you two guys talk. And we took off and started walking around. He did all the talking. And he told me his life story and the things that happened to him and how he got to Drake University and on and on and on. And, man, you know, this man was just an amazing person. Well, we put that aside. And then some 50 years later, I get a call from Doug Elgin, the commissioner for the Missouri Valley Conference. And he says, Dolph, he says, we'd like to do a project with Johnny Bright, a documentary, and we want you involved. And so I got involved with three other guys, and we worked together to put this documentary on Johnny Bright's life together. And that's how it all got started.
Yeah, I remember that story, and of course the Des Moines Register. So why don't you give just a snapshot of the story and what happened to Johnny Bright? My young guys here, by the way, I've got Ray and Ben with me. They'll be chiming in. They've done a little research on it, but tell the audience, all right, you know, what happened, and this was unfortunately too prevalent many times in America. You and I talked about what Drake University went through in the late 60s, even when the movie Glory Days came out about the Texas El Paso team, Texas Western, actually. Right. And this was prior to that. So share with the audience a little bit the gist of your documentary and what happened to Johnny Bright.
Okay. Well, folks, back in 1949, a young man coming out of Fort Wayne, Indiana, was a black guy, and he was looking for a college, a Division I university, to let him play quarterback at their university. Well, no university in America would let a black, an African-American quarterback their football team. They offered him scholarships so he could play basketball, he could run track, he'd do this, that, and the other, but he couldn't quarterback our football team. Except for one university, Drake University, said, hey, come on out, we'll bring you out on a basketball scholarship, and if you want to try out for the football team, then go ahead and try out for the football team. So he came to Drake on a basketball scholarship, and he played his freshman year for basketball, and then his sophomore year, he tried out for the football team. And the coach let him on the sidelines. By halftime, Drake was losing. And by halftime, coach said, let's give this kid Bright a chance. Well, in one half, Johnny Bright ran for over 200 yards, threw two touchdowns, ran for one touchdown. The coach said, hey, maybe we better use this kid a lot more. And so Johnny Bright, so they designed a single wing offense for Johnny Bright. And that was his sophomore year, his junior year, his senior year. Johnny Bright is tearing them up all over the conference, all over the country. And now Johnny Bright is the number one candidate for the Heisman Trophy. Every time he goes onto the football field, teams target him because he's black and he's a quarterback and they want to get him out. And other schools would call him names. They call him the N-word. And they'd give him extra hits when the referee wasn't watching and what have you. Well, Johnny Bright, as I said, was the number one candidate for the Heisman Trophy. In 1952, they're playing in Oklahoma. At that time, Oklahoma A&M. And they had a hit out on him. And no matter what it did, they want him out. They wanted, they had signs that said, N-words, you're not allowed on our football field. We don't want you on our team. We don't want you in our city. We don't want you. And so, but that's what he had to go through. The first play at Oklahoma in 1952, Johnny Bright hikes the football, goes back, throws for a pass. He's standing there watching the pass. Oklahoma player comes in, the referee turns his head, his back to Johnny Bright, and the guy lands a shot in his jaw with his fist, breaks Johnny Bright's jaw, knocks him down to the field. Johnny Bright gets up, throws another touchdown football pass, and he got hit again, knocked him out this time, and they carried him off the field with a broken jaw. He finished the season. So as well, he did. He played one game late in the season after his jaw healed, but it was too late for him to win the Heisman Trophy, and so he lost out on the Heisman Trophy. If he had finished that season, Johnny Bright would have been the first African American to receive the Heisman Trophy back in 1952. So that's a little snapshot of Johnny Bright's life.
And how did you decide to do this documentary? Because I think it's riveting, obviously, and it tells the social climate during that era. And Drake University, even your Final Four team is a testament to it, has always been at the forefront of inclusion, I would say, in some capacity. I think you'd agree with me.
Yep, I would agree. You know, even though back in those days, as Johnny Bright told me, you know, African-American males could not live on campus with the rest of the students. African-American males couldn't eat their meals in the dining hall on campus. They had to live in rented rooms in the African-American community, and they had to eat all of their meals in those rooms in the African-American community. On game day, they couldn't eat their meals with the football team on campus. When they traveled, they had to find rooms in the African-American communities in the towns that they were in to let them stay in their rooms because they were not allowed to stay in the hotel. And so there was a lot that went on, and this is all of this stuff culminated with us wanting to tell the story. A lot of people had not heard of Johnny Bright, and that if it hadn't been for Johnny Bright, a lot of African-American quarterbacks today, both in high school, in college, and in the pros, are all standing on Johnny Bright's shoulders right now. And so we wanted to tell the story. We wanted to let people know about this man and the things that he had accomplished, and all of the setbacks that he had, and all of the people that didn't want him to succeed, but he succeeded anyway. And that's why we wanted to do this story, Mike, and that's why we wanted to tell it. And it has been received very well around the country.
Hey there. So I saw that he decided to choose.
This is my bodyguard, Ben Botham, by the way, Dolph. Great young kid. Went to Savannah State.
Yeah, so I saw when I was doing some research on him, he decided to choose the Canadian Football League over the NFL. And in my research of Negro League ball players, they preferred playing in Canada because the treatment that they received there. Was this a major factor in him choosing the Canadian Football League over the NFL?
Yes, he was drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFL. And because of the treatment that he had been receiving in this country, and Philadelphia, he figured that he would probably get worse treatment playing in the NFL than he would in the Canadian Football League. So he decided instead to go to the Canadian Football League. But by the way, the Canadian Football League offered Johnny Bright more money than the NFL did. And so that was another deciding factor for him to go to the Canadian Football League. Because of the climate there, and that they wanted him there, they would let him be a quarterback there. There was no assurance that Johnny Bright was going to be allowed to quarterback a football team in the NFL in those days.
You're listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection right here, live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. We're on RadioSt.Pete.com and, of course, on our Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. Conversation with my good friend Dolph Bulliam. He's up in the Windy City, and his involvement in the documentary on Johnny Bright. How does the audience that's listening to us find that documentary, Adolphus?
Mike, it has been a teaching moment for many of the football teams that have seen the video. It gave them a chance to talk about how they what they can rally around, and how they can what they need to do to succeed, and how they need to overcome any kinds of hardships that they have. It gave them a chance to talk about racism in America, and how to deal with that. You know, it gave them a chance to talk about their football programs, and the members of that team becoming a family that protects each other, that fights for each other, that respect one another. That's what's been going on with teams that have been watching this program. But not only that, I've been talking to some folks here in my area, and they watched it too with their families at home, and it gave them a chance to talk with their children about how to succeed and how not to be distracted from things that try to make you feel less than what you are, or the racism that you feel that you face in America. It's given them a chance to talk about things like that, and it's helpful when folks can focus, when young people can focus on the goals that they have, and not get sidetracked by giving up and saying, I can't do this because they don't like me. They aren't giving me a chance. They're holding me back. You're supposed to succeed anyway, and not just African-American youth, but any youth in America, any young person, anybody that wants to succeed in life. When people try to pull you down, make you feel less than what you are, this is when you're supposed to have the strength to say, I'm going to show you, I'm going to be the best that I can. And that's what this program has been all about.
You know, Dolph, what I need to do is, as we did up north, get Coach Ken Carter and you and come on down to the Tampa St. Pete area, and we find a forum where you guys can share your stories, because they're very, very inspirational. And I've been in contact with Coach Carter. I know you enjoyed our time together when we did that event up in Des Moines. And, yeah, I look forward to that. I'll be talking to you a lot here in the future. Let's shift gears a little bit, because I want to share how interesting Dolph Pulliam of a man is, and what your life has been. And let's go back to 1969 and the Final Four, and little Drake University is taking on the Titan of college basketball. And you were responsible for defending Lou Alcindor, of course, later on, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's just one little tidbit of your interesting life. And then I want you to share your growing up in Gary, Indiana, in your neighborhood, was just a kind of a popular entertainment group called the Jacksons, the Jackson Five. And see, you name it, sports and entertainment. Dolph Pulliam has been in the middle of it. And not to mention that, you turned down an opportunity to play at the Boston Celtics or the Dallas Cowboys and pursue a career in broadcasting. So you've had a full life, and you're not done yet, my man.
We don't even have time to go into all of this on the air today, Mike. But yes, I have. I've had a rich life. It as people say, it's not how you start this race; it's how you end it. And my race started in West Point, Mississippi in 1946 in the cotton fields of Mississippi with my mom, my other eight brothers and sisters, and we lived in a one-room, tin-roof shack, and we picked cotton to make a living. Now, that's how my life started. You know, we were ruled by the Ku Klux Klan and the Jim Crow laws back in the South. We weren't allowed to have an education. We couldn't go to school. We were threatened all the time by those people. They used to hang people, and I used to have to watch my people being hanged as a kid down in Mississippi. But we got through that. My mom got us out of there. And I got to Gary, Indiana, and became a star football, basketball player. And I got many offers to go to college to play basketball or football. And we chose Drake University, and that's another story which we'll get into sometime later. And then a little school that nobody had ever heard of in Des Moines, Iowa, Drake University. We went up my senior year in 1969, went up against the best team in America, the UCLA Bruins. And Coach John has said, now this is how we're going to beat UCLA, because UCLA has been beating people by 20, 30 points. He said that Lou Alcindor is going to get his point. So just do the best you can on him. But the key to us winning this basketball game is Dolph is going to guard a guy by the name of Len Shackelford. Len Shackelford was the leading scorer for the UCLA Bruins in those days, and people didn't realize that. And Coach said, Dolph is going to hold Len Shackelford to 5 points. And I went, what? Coach, am I saying Dolph? You gotta hold him, Dolph. You gotta hold him, Dolph. If you hold him, we're gonna win this ball game. Oh my God! So we get into this game with UCLA back and forth, back and forth. By the with 10 seconds to go in the game. Oh, by the way, the announcer for that game was a guy by the name of Kurt Gowdy. As the game started, Kurt Gowdy kept calling us Duke University. That's the kind of disrespect that we had. Nobody ever heard of us. What is this little team doing playing in the NCAA Final Four? But with 10 seconds to go, we're down by 3 points. And my teammate, Willie McCarter, took a long shot from the corner. Everybody went to the basket. I was there bumping elbows with Kareem and Sidney Wicks and Curtis Rowe. And the ball comes off the rim. I get the rebound, go back up. We're down by one with 5 seconds to go. We try to put on a full court press. Lou Alcindor throws it to Len Shackelford. As soon as Shackelford got the ball, We grabbed it out of his hands. The buzzer sounded. That referee called the foul on us. When I made that last shot for Drake, we thought that I was fouled. And we thought that the referee was going to call a foul for us and that I would go to the free throw line and we'd tie the game and take it into overtime. But the referee didn't make the call. But when we took the ball from Len Shackelford at the buzzer, when the game was almost was just about over, that same referee called the foul on us then. So that was an exciting time for the Drake basketball team. We had never been that far in the history of our university. We've never gotten that far since either. But we're going to get there one of these days. We're going to get back there again. So I was drafted by the Boston Celtics and the Dallas Cowboys. And I turned them down because my professor at Drake University and the city leaders, including the governor of the state of Iowa and the mayors and all of the politicians and all of the big givers to Drake, said, Dolph, please don't go. Dolph, stay here. We want to keep you in our community. Stay with us. So I turned my draft offers down, and I became the first African-American television broadcaster in the state of Iowa. And I did that for 20 years. So I've had a great life, Mike, and as you know, and you've been part of that with me in those days.
Hey, let's finish with a very interesting story, and that, of course, is growing up, the Jacksons growing up in your neighborhood.
Oh, my God. Okay, so here I am, Mike. I'm working as the television broadcaster at a local station in Des Moines, Iowa. The general manager of the station walks into the newsroom, and he says, Folks, listen up. He says, the Jacksons are here to perform at the Iowa State Fair. And he says, if we can only get an interview with the Jacksons, we could control the market. He says, I called out to the hotel, and they won't even talk to me. He says, if we only had somebody that could get to them. And everybody in the newsroom said, oh, I don't know. So then I said, hey, let me try. And they said, how do you think you can get them? And I said, I went to school with them. And they said, well, go see if you can get an interview with the Jacksons. So I called out to the hotel, and they put me through to the road manager's room. As soon as the road manager came on, he said, this is Roach. I said, Mr. Roach? He said, yeah, this is Roach. Who is this? I said, well, Mr. Roach, this is Adolphus Pulliam. He said, Adolphus Pulliam? Is this the Adolphus Pulliam from Roosevelt High School in Gary, Indiana? I said, yes, sir. He says, Adolphus, what are you doing in Des Moines, Iowa? And I said, well, I work for the local TV station. He says, you do? How would you like to interview the Jacksons? And he says, the Jacksons hate being here in Iowa. They don't want to go out and perform. They won't even leave their room. And he says, but if they see you, he says, you're just the man I need. Would you get out here to the hotel, and I will surprise them, and I'll bring them in after you get set up. So my cameraman comes out with me. We go to the room. We set up, and I said to the cameraman, I said, now look, when that door opens, you flip the switch on that camera and get whatever happens. So he said, oh, okay. So the door opens, the Jacksons are looking down at the floor, and then they looked up and they go, it's Adolphus Pulliam. Oh my God, it's Adolphus Pulliam. They rush into the room, they're jumping up into my arms, and we're hugging each other, laughing and carrying on, and Michael saying, Adolphus, you left Gary, Indiana before I could get your autograph. He said, Adolphus, I got to have your autograph. Now, this is Michael Jackson asking me for my autograph. And so I said, okay, Michael, I'll sign it for you. How do you want me to sign it? He says, to my best friend, Michael, from Adolphus Pulliam. And that's what I did. Well, anyway, we controlled the market that night on television because of that interview.
Well, and you controlled Des Moines for decades, my friend. I appreciate you taking time to share your stories. We're gonna talk more about collaborating, and stay warm up there in Chicago. I still got to put a lunch together with my daughter and you, and yes. And the next time I'm up there, we are getting together. All right.
All right, man. Thank you so much, and I hope the folks get a chance to check out Johnny Bright. Google him on the internet. And you'll read a great story about a great guy.
All right, he's Dolph Pulliam. We got to take a break. We ran over, but it was well worth it. We'll be back here on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection, on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network.
Halftime. Halftime's over. Reset the clock.
We're going to shut them down.
Dial the down.
Do it!
And get your head in the game.
Visualize an attack. Yes. Visualize an attack.
Yes. Get the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. Live from the Clubhouse Studios inside Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
I take a scotch and water. Hold the scotch.
On the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
What does Sea Dog Brewing and Shipyard Tampa Bay Tailgate have in common? Both are world-class experiences, owned by the same people. Want a great place to spend some time with friends this holiday season? The place to be is Sea Dog Treasure Island, 9610 Gulf Boulevard. Why Sea Dog, you ask? Well, it's locally owned with locally produced brew right here in Florida. It's also a place for fun, food, and drink on the coastal Blind Pass waterfront, ice pick draft drinks, Sea Dog Blue Paw, and a Mug Club Rewards program. Get all this to go with a family-owned breakfast experience with homemade biscuits and more. Open 8 a.m. to late night. Check it out at treasure.seadogbrewing.com. While there, enter to win Tampa Bay tailgate tickets near Ray J for Bucks home games. Sea Dog Brewing, Treasure Island. It's where Tampa Bay family and friends go to enjoy life from breakfast to late night. 9610 Gulf Boulevard, Shipyard, Sea Dog Brewing. Check it out at treasure.seadogbrewing.com.
Visit RadioSaintPete.com for a great variety of local audio programs, live coverage of local events, award-winning syndicated radio programs, over 800 Tampa Bay musicians, and of course, local sports coverage. Download the free Radio St. Pete apps or find RadioSaintPete.com on your enabled speakers. RadioSaintPete.com is where local music lives.
Ferg Sports Bar and Grill at the corner of 13th and Central across from the Trop in downtown St. Pete, serving Champa Bay for over 29 years, is your iconic headquarters to catch your favorite teams in action with over 95 televisions, 35,000 square feet to serve private parties, game watching events, concerts, and of course all the Rays, Bucks, and Lightning action along with your favorite collegiate teams. Join the party every game at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
Pulling out all the stops of the fourth.
All right, let's go.
Time to bring it home with the dub.
Let's get rocking.
Stick to the game plan with a Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection live from the Clubhouse Studios inside Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
Let's rock this joint.
On the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on a spectacular Saturday down here. Ferg, feels great to get, first of all, my age to be celebrating a new year, still be on the planet, as this is our first show of the year from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, where today you got the NFL, tomorrow NFL, and, of course, on Monday night we've got the NCAA championship. But people are forgetting today there's the FCS championship. South Dakota State against North Dakota State. I participated in track and field and a couple football games during the day, back in the day in that conference. It was the North Central Conference. So you've got the Bison against the Jackrabbits. Doesn't that sound like something from South Dakota and North Dakota?
Sure does.
Bison and Jackrabbits, baby, for the national championship in Frisco, Texas. And that, I tell you what, a lot of NFLers coming out of North Dakota State right now.
Josh Allen, right? No, not Josh Allen.
Come on, man.
Back to Josh Freeman. No, it's Kansas.
Man, I thought you were my insider.
Any Buccaneers?
Oh, listen to me. Right. Listen. There's a Green Bay Packer from Plant High School that went to North Dakota State, and he's currently their best wide receiver, Watson.
Yes.
Yes.
Numero 9.
Yeah. And quarterbacks? And anybody you can think of?
I know this one.
North Dakota State.
I know.
He's riding pine for the Redskins, but they started him last week.
Sam?
What's that?
Sam, not Sam.
Man.
Heineke?
I bring him in for all this wisdom. Anyway.
Is it Heineke?
No.
Oh.
I'm not telling you.
You're not telling
me? I'll tell you a little bit later in the segment.
Oh, okay.
Think about it. Two quarterbacks have come out of North Dakota State in the last decade. One won a Super Bowl for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Carson Wentz.
Very good.
Hey, ding, ding, ding. This would be a State. Soundboard here, Mike.
North Dakota State, boys.
Yes, sir.
All right, he's Ben Botham. That's Ray Kennedy, and we're going to talk. Where do we want to go next? We want to talk your being at the meeting that Mark Ferguson wants to make certain that I for baseball, Ben Botham, that's probably the perfect topic.
It's home. It was great to see
and you. And then we'll close out with our Bucks conversation. We got 20 minutes.
I just love the fact that there were over standing room only, over 400 people, dressed nice. We're not talking flip-flops and tank tops, even though that's, you know.
That's why I didn't go.
No flip-flops and tank tops?
No tank. Well, it's definitely no tank top.
And there was no open bars. But, you know, you don't drink anyway, Mike.
Three criteria for me.
But it was great to see everyone because it's a historic gas plant district. And I remember back in 85 when they told the residents there, they didn't do eminent domain, but they said, we're going to take care of you with the redevelopment. The entire city of St. Petersburg is redeveloped. But with this project that's coming up here, this $1 billion project, they're going to make sure they take care of the locals. And that's probably the most biggest where it starts and finishes as far as importance.
Well, one of the things that Mark Ferguson and I had this conversation, and I think it's important to everybody out there to email the mayor, Ken Welch. Mm. We need to approve this plan to move forward. Don't you agree?
Yeah, and the thing is that there's four on the table. Well, you guys saw one of the guys, the first thing, 50+1 is one of the groups that gave a presentation.
Yeah,
the guy gets up there, and he says, I'm prepared to give $800 million to Mr. Sternberg tomorrow to build the stadium.
Well, Mark
signed
broke
the
down,
deal.
Mark, well, Mark broke down for me in detail. He was there,
right.
the presentations. And I will tell you the group that from a – if you want to look at success, history, worldwide projects, Himes. I mean,
yes, their facilities, their sports facilities are incredible.
Thank you very much. There goes my buddy Kenny and Sherry Knowles, my executive producer, and of course my photography and videographer. And we'll be at Katiki tonight. Hey,
Where Tom's playing tonight?
Tom's playing tonight, man.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Get down there.
I'm coming. My family's coming back from Carolina, but they're going to have to do without me.
Yeah, well, they're used to it.
The Tiki at sunset right now is going to be a horrific.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah,
absolutely
night.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Loving it.
7 o'clock tonight, anyway. I digress.
You
so Mark said, Himes, if you take a look at the presentation, the professionalism, the history of what they've done, they have a track record, I guess, if you will.
Yes.
The key is the email.
They got to do something soon because Tampa is putting out some good designs out there. They came up with it pretty quick. They don't want to lose this, so I think
they lost a lot of credibility though. Tampa. Yeah,
they don't know how to pay for it. They're going to throw another half cent
well, from
tax
their,
or
from
something
their original,
like that.
From their original, I mean that just it was done deal. Remember,
it's Ybor.
Tampa was
put
done
it on a tiny little field in Ybor, and we're going to make it work. And
it was a done deal essentially. And then boom.
I'm tired of Ybor. I'm sorry. I'm a peninsula guy.
It was essentially fabrication, a good portion of it. So I do believe we need email.
Yep.
And blow
Mayor
up.
Welch.
Write some letters.
Exactly.
To the P.O. box.
Exactly.
Matt Silverman was there. I talked to Matt Silverman. Got a chance to talk to Matt. Of course, Mayor Welch
saw that. Saw a picture of you a big time with him.
Yeah. Well, I knew Matt, and of course, going back to when Andrew Friedman and because I used to do photography over there. So on Sundays, the kids would all run the bases, and of course, Andrew Friedman's kids would come out. Silverman would come down with his young. I think she, at the time she was his girlfriend or fiance, but got a chance to talk with him. You know, I told him about some free agents I got my eye on.
I bet they wrote all that down.
No, but I love it.
What was your free agency suggestion?
Yeah, who do you like?
Sharing that with the audience.
On the farm, go with the pigs because they're not only the dirtiest animal, but they make the most food. But the thing was is that I loved it when I shared that picture. A lot of people DM'd me, and they made a great point. I think you'll agree here, Ben. Best analytical mind in the game. Matt Friedman, one of the best analytical minds in the game. The things the Rays do year in and year out.
They may have a hard time keeping him around.
Yeah, they're going to have to fork over some cashola to keep him with
them. And you know how much they enjoy doing that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, who knows? With the new way with this new wave of baseball that they're coming up with where they're not allowed to shift as much, maybe the analytics are going to – I mean, I'm not saying they're not going to play a part, but a lot of these guys, I think their batting averages are going to go up. When you can't put 12 guys on one side of the field,
Do you think it's good for the game? I don't like dictating how the game should be played in a situational decision-making process for a coach. That's why you have coaches. Don't you agree, Ben?
I agree
yeah,
wholeheartedly.
I agree.
Because,
yeah.
First of all, I think it speaks volumes of how poor talent-wise some of the modern players are that they can't hit to the other side of the field.
Or bunt.
Or bunt.
Yeah.
You have one player on the left side of the field, and you can't figure out any way to get the ball over there.
It's ridiculous.
Change the rules, right?
Well, yeah. You're dictating how the game should be played specifically. You know, I'm not talking about rules. I'm talking about, no, we want to minimize this happening. And it's part of the game.
Yeah. And I get it with the opener. The Rays have used so brilliantly. You bring in five or six pitchers in the first five innings. You've let the other team not get a chance to get – I'll give you, it does take away from the Sandy Koufax going nine innings or John
Sandy Koufax.
I'm just saying, you know, the history of the game. But yet, if it's what works for you, hit the pitchers they put in there. Read the ball better. Lay the bunts down.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with the opener at all. I think that that's positive. That's kind of fun for the game. I still do think that, you know, you should have pitchers that can go, you know, seven, yes, eight, even nine innings. But, you know, the opener is fun. It's not as bad as, you know, telling everybody you can't go on this side or we need to make the bases larger for quotation player safety.
Pitch clock, though. I think we all agree the pitching clock. Oh, Ben rolled his eyes because he's a pitcher. Ben is a pitcher. So what is it? Why is a pitcher clock a problem with you keeping that game moving along a little faster?
It's all about momentum and about letting the pitcher take their time.
They've gone overboard, my friend.
I think it's more the hitter's fault than the pitcher's fault. The hitter, after every single pitch, they step out,
adjust
the gloves.
I agree.
They tie their shoes.
That is ludicrous.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
And another thing that I hate about the pitch clock is the step-off rule, where they can just take a free base if they step off more than twice at a bat. Are you kidding
me? That's a new rule?
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
Unless they step off and throw him out on the third attempt, then it's a free base. They get to just take
it. Which is crazy, because going back to my Little League days, and you pitched a lot more at Savannah State, stepping on and on and off the rubber, it's a thing.
Yep.
Being on the rubber, you're literally, your mind is in a different place. You take a second step off because sometimes you need to collect yourself. That's going to be big.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. On the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection, I got to do a little plug for our sponsors. This conversation with Ben and Ray, which may get a little heated as we continue, is brought to you by Shrimpy's Waterfront. I know you absolutely love Shrimpy's Waterfront. I got to get all you guys out to Sea Dogs as well. See, I'm very fortunate. Here I am doing business with clients that live blocks away. So I just flip-flop. One day I'll go over to Sea Dogs. I took some guys from the Florida Sports Network there. They're very impressed. On Thursday night, we had a nice meal at Sea Dogs. And then earlier in the week, I'd gone over to Shrimpy's with my buddy John. And, of course, Ice Pick Vodka. You can get Ice Pick Vodka down here at Ferg's. Just ask for a Champa Bay. Those are spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
You've tasted them before.
Oh, we have. Ben and I did a few. We got in trouble, started fights, got arrested. How did you get out of jail that night? You know, but they are so good because Jake gave us each one. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. They were great. We see a couple people down there drinking a couple. So, I mean, it's very popular. Everyone loves them. So, come on out here and get some.
All right. So, bottom line on the Rays Stadium is make sure you're emailing Ken Welch. Now let's take time and focus on the season that is upon us. And that, of course, says tomorrow the Bucks in Atlanta, and this place will be jam-packed. And who would you prefer that – not the Colts. Who would you prefer that the Bucks host next weekend?
Wow, so like Dallas?
What do you think the best matchup is for us to proceed?
The Bucks beat the Eagles last year in the first round. And, of course, if Eagles lost and then Frisco won, they're the top seed. But if Dallas and Frisco lost, the Eagles could jump up to first seed, which would put Cowboys, which would put the Eagles here. I think both teams are a good matchup. I mean, we've beaten Dallas twice 2 years in a row in the first game. Dak seems like he's on a bit of a roll, and they're going to have a chip on their shoulder. So it's going to be – the Bucks have to play defense. So I would take the Eagles. I don't know why.
Really?
I'd take the Eagles. Yeah, because, you know, they've got Gerald McCoy. They're going to come in with an attitude. But the thing is, Jalen Hurts, he's still young. He's near MVP this season.
Is he going to be healthy for the game?
That's another thing that I wonder. Because Dak, he seems like he's pretty healthy. Jalen Hurts, our defense can get after it, so we can shake him up a little bit. But then maybe it's his coming out party. But I like the Eagles if we could get them in here. But it looks like it'll probably be Dallas.
See, I just can't believe we're here at this moment where
there's a lot of fans out there saying that
where the Buckaroos have a really good chance at going to the Super Bowl. Isn't that crazy?
Off the season they had,
Tom Brady, people wrote him off, but he's proved time and time again. There's no stopping him. And I will disagree with you. I do think we should be playing the Cowboys. He's never lost.
Never lost to Dallas. No. And the Falcons. Never lost to the Falcons. And so the Falcons are going to be, Desmond Ritter is going to be plumbing hot tomorrow. The Bucs should be sitting their starters. But I think that you put it upon your team 2 years removed from a championship, divisional playoffs last season, veteran-led defense. You say go in there and win it. But like I said earlier, give the young guys a chance to play. Next season when we got free agents, the guys have got a little taste of what really competition is, not just in practice.
If you don't play Brady, which quarterback do you go with?
I go with Blaine for a quarter, maybe a half. But I give Kyle Trask. Everybody's thing about Kyle Trask is he's never suited up and he's never played. I'm not saying a guy comes out and set the world's on fire, but second-round pick out of University of Florida. Bruce Arians is known as a quarterback whisperer. This kid is 6'6", 240, stands in the pocket. Let's see what he's got. Give him a chance to spread those wings.
Now, is he the quarterback that saved those guys in the helicopter crash? Or
that was Blaine Gabbert.
That was Blaine Gabbert.
Good move, right?
That was something. I mean,
that's B-A-L-L-S.
Yeah, because it wasn't so much what he did on the jet skis, but he just, the moment it happened, he just went right toward it. Some people run into that burning house. Some people run away from it. We now know what Blaine Gabbert is. And I've always known he's a gamer.
Maybe that's a good reason to put him in, showing that he's the guy that runs into the fire. My money's on him to start it.
I like it. I would have taken Blaine this season if Tom hadn't come back, just because he's had 7 years in this offensive system, going back to the Arizona Cardinals with Bruce Arians. But tomorrow, okay, you made the playoffs. You're 8-9 below 500. You're 9-8 above 500. You made the playoffs. At the end of the day, the banner over there at the One Buck Place says 2022 NFC South Champions.
And they've never had back-to-back.
First time in team history.
Yeah.
That was nice.
So they're making history. Hey, when you take a look at the offense now, what do you think? Should it be the two-minute mindset from the get-go in the first game of the playoffs?
Tell you one thing.
Shouldn't show your hand on Saturday tomorrow by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, what you're doing is you're asking me an indirect question, and I'm going to answer directly. I will tell you that I heard from at least more than two sources, can't name my sources, over last week at the ReliQuest Bowl over in the press box, and pretty much the word on the street is that Byron Leftwich is not back here in 2023. So Todd Bowles continues to maintain this team, but I think that because you see you see the success the Bucs have when they go 2 minute, and Tom's doing the pure offense. Look at the fourth down last week. It was fourth and one, right? Byron Leftwich had two guys he was going to send to personnel in typical Bucs move all year. They were going to get probably stopped in the backfield for a loss of two, and Tom Brady waved the guy's personnel off, called his own number, picked up the first down, team went on to win the game. I think he's already proven that maybe the offense is a problem with the Bucs, even with the offensive line issues.
Only down here at Ferg's where we try to do a radio show. Well, I think we've got our first dog fan.
A member here.
What's his name?
Part of the show.
His name is Bert.
Hey, Bert, thanks for listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. What kind of dog is Bert? I can't see him.
He's a French bulldog.
Okay, well, Frenchie, yeah, you can move on now. Thanks for listening to...
He wants a Champa Bay. He just said he wants a Champa Bay. He's going to get one of those Champa Bays.
That's a good photo op. All right, we're running out of time. We got to continue to bore our fans. Hey, anyway.
Thank you. Welcome here and talk. Yeah, go ahead.
No.
Let's talk about that championship game. TCU, Sonny Dykes, first year as coach of this team, takes over this team. He's a disciple of Mike Leach.
I'm doing the horn frog.
There you go, yes, baby. Sir. Georgia, Stetson Bennett, great story. He was originally a walk-on at Georgia. They didn't like him. He goes to junior college. They call him back. 2 years, Todd Monken's the offensive coordinator, former Buccaneer offensive coordinator with those Georgia Bulldogs. But you guys talked about it. Who do you like in this game between TCU and Georgia on Monday?
Well, my heart says TCU because of the quarterback's from Council Bluffs, Iowa.
That always works into it, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Without a shadow of doubt, no different than Nelson and, of course, Tristan. And of course,
Tristan Wirfs.
Tristan Wirfs.
I got a tattoo of that guy right here. It says, I love T. And talking about Nelson.
Well, you're Tristan, but great name. And you named him before Wirfs was even playing college football. So I've got to go with the Horned Frogs.
See, I find it hard to agree with you there, Mike, but I am leaning.
Well, I didn't say they're going to win.
Well, I am leaning with you there because if anything, Ohio State proved that Georgia is not invincible. They took them down to the last minute, yeah. And if it wasn't for that wide kick, they would have won the game.
Wow.
And then look at Michigan. The TCU managed to beat Michigan. They brought them in and made them play their style of football. And if they're able to do that against Georgia, Georgia's going to lose the game.
Two great college football games, weren't they?
And the second one, the kick is literally goes off as the clock strikes midnight on New Year's Eve. You talk about.
Just and my old carcass was sitting at home, and I was happy this year. First time I had sat at home for, you know, my God, probably 40 years.
My family was out of town. I had a house to myself. It was football, football. I was eating cereal and drinking milk at midnight, but I'm an old man. I have no problem with that.
He was eating cereal and drinking beer.
Drinking beer and a cereal. It was like Caddyshack.
There you go. Nothing.
It was like the animal house. But Anthony Nelson, former Iowa Hawkeye, you talked about him. 2 strip sacks, 2 weeks in a row, 5.5 sacks, number 2 on his season with the Buccaneers, playing from that defensive
position. His stock has gone up considerably.
He's got a motor.
What's number 9's name?
Tryon Cheyenne.
He was supposed to be the real deal. Nelson is passing him up in terms of performance.
And I've always known that about Nelson. He has got a high motor, but just love the fact
that Hawkeye motor, baby.
I tell you what, because that's what the Buccaneers are going to do. Make no mind bones about it. The offense needs to show up, but like in 2022 when it's Super Bowl 55, the defense will be has to win this game when Todd Bowles will establish himself as a true leader of the Buccaneers.
Back to the national championship. So it's a 12.5-point spread. And right now, 90% of the money is on TCU. I don't know. I think Georgia at any time could just turn it on. Yeah. And TCU may have you know, as they say, blown your
I get you. Blown a couple of fuses there.
Yeah.
They really
to get to the Final Four, if you will. And they were on the outside looking in. The beauty of this entire Cinderella story is they weren't even ranked at the beginning of the season. They weren't even ranked in the top 25.
They were ranked pick 7th in their division.
In the Big 12.
And, you know, Kirk Herbstreit made a great point. The 3-3-5, the defense they run, because the Big 12, a lot of teams went to the spread offense.
And that's a hell of a defense.
And that's why you give the 3-3-5, which can always go adjust to a 3-4 or whatever, it gives them a little bit of a latitude for a Stetson Bennett to maybe confuse him. But this kid's been around. He's played college football for 17 years. You don't confuse
him. But that TCU defense, did you see the way? I mean, they were laying a lick. They look like a Big Ten team that you know, is a pound and ground, and then the defense, it just kicks butt. And I was very impressed. And you don't see that out of a Big 12 team very often.
You think that Jim Harbaugh goes back and challenges?
Omar Khakis is not going into the pros.
No, do you think he challenges that touchdown, though, on where the guy fumbled it?
They blew that.
Because he was across the goal line. But they're like, oh, we'll take the ball first and go at the one inside.
But that makes up for several calls that went Michigan's way, too.
Yeah, it evened out a little bit, but that was a big one.
He might try and skedaddle out of college football with the recruiting violations that have been coming
his way. You know what? That just makes me laugh.
For buying hamburgers for the players?
It makes me laugh. With this portal, NIL, if the NCAA is investigating, like,
talking about hamburgers.
So what?
Talking about
it's just like
hamburgers.
Talking about hamburgers. 1977. John L. McKay sends assistant coach. Joe Gibbs. He was assistant with the Bucks. Sends him to Grambling to interview Doug Williams to see if he's the real deal. The Bucks have the number 1 overall pick. He takes Doug Williams and takes them both to dinner at McDonald's. Asks some questions over dinner. Comes back and tells John McKay Doug Williams is the real deal. They draft him, and the rest is Buccaneer history, but more like Washington Redskin history. Of course, he ends up being Super Bowl MVP years later under Joe Gibbs as the head coach there.
And the athletic director at Grambling University. Well, gentlemen, so your pick?
Buccaneers over the Falcons. We're going to be hosting the Cowboys next week, and I'm taking the Horned Frogs to cover 12.5.
You?
I really want to pick the Horned Frogs, but I just can't see them really beating Georgia. If this game's played 9 times out of 10, I think Georgia beats them and the Horned Frogs get it 1 and done.
How about the 12.5 points, though? You think that Georgia covers that spread?
Yeah, Georgia wins.
All right, guys. Well, I certainly appreciate it. This has been fun, our first show of the year. We're going to have a spectacular 2023 for Tom Gribben, Coach Bo, and the Triton baseball team, Mark Lindsay, Dolph Pulliam, Ben Botham, the great Ray Kennedy, Joe Bardrow, Big Ed, and Matt on the controls. I'm Mike Rickard. Thank you for listening to Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. Wishing you and your families a fabulous weekend. God bless you. God bless America. And as always, be sure to have a championship week.